like to everyone to turn to the book of Genesis. Let me get the right verse here. In Genesis 25. And I'm sure that we've heard the story of Esau and Jacob, twin boys that were born to Isaac and Rebekah. They were grandsons, those boys, of Abraham. Esau was the firstborn of twins. And he was the eldest who stood in line to inherit the legacy of Abraham and Isaac. And as we read in Genesis 25, we find that Esau was an avid and accomplished hunter. He was a very self-assured man, and his father Isaac favored him. But unfortunately, Esau did not esteem or value the legacy or the birthright that he was to inherit from his father Isaac. So when we read in Genesis 25 and verse 29, and Jacob, and I have the King James Version here, and Jacob sowed pottage, and Esau came from the field, and he was faint. Verse 30, and Esau said to Jacob, feed me, I pray you, and with that some red pottage, for I am faint. Esau was very hungry. He had been out, and it says he was a hunter. We can presume that he was out hunting. It says he came from the field. And the red pottage is a lentil. It's a legume. It's a type of, similarly, we have lentils today. They're a type of legume, such as a bean. And according to the Davis Dictionary of Bible and Smith's Bible Dictionary, and I looked in today's Dictionary of the Bible, these red pottage are lentils. Are commonly used in the Mideast, even today, as a common food. Well, Jacob knew how to prepare those foods, and it was very savory. The pleasant odor of the beans were simmering in the pot must have been very alluring to the famished Esau. Now, I will admit, I like beans. They're one of my favorite foods. And, of course, those beans or lentils are a legume. And, of course, we here eat more beans of that same food family. And those legumes means that they take into their roots, those plants, take nitrogen from the air, and they put it into the plant. And it has little nodules, little bumps on the roots. And those are stored nitrogen, and it makes it an important source of protein, that nitrogen, so that we can, amino acids, so that we can build protein in our own bodies. And, of course, we're familiar with those edible beans. And I grew up also raising crops there was edible beans grown in the area, but the leaves and the stems and the stalks were used for livestock fodder. And then I got to thinking, there was the story that we've all heard as a child about Jack and the beanstalk. And the beans, of course, have climbing vines. My eldest daughter uses a three-seed technique in her garden. She plants corn to grow tall, squash to cover the ground, and then beans in the same place that will wind up the stalk. So as the corn grows, the bean plant grows up, wraps its vines around, and the squash spreads out in the ground and shades out the weeds. When you combine beans with rice, it makes a more complete protein. In fact, I was reading and just stumbled across it yesterday that the five foods that you could survive with, if you really, really had to, if just the five foods that meet your needs would be beans and corn and squash, rice and eggs, interestingly enough. And there are different theories on that, but beans are integral. If you take a look at how many different kinds that we consume now, of course, there's pinto beans, a staple in Latin America. Then there's black beans. I like to keep a few of those on my pantry shelf. My personal favorite are northern white beans when they're soaked and barbecued up and just baked just right. Have the brown sugar and the spices, and I can almost taste them now. And then there's, of course, the little navy beans and lima beans, the ones that you ate because your mother said you had to. Butter beans is something new to me, being raised in the North. I had never heard of butter beans until I was nearly 40 and I had was doing business around the country, and I was in South Carolina visiting a customer, and he said, "You're coming with me to lunch. We're going to show you some Southern-style food." And that was my first taste of butter beans, and so now I have them at home. I like to put about equal amounts of butter as I do with the beans. It's just really good. Of course, we have kidney beans, pea beans, chili beans, and, of course, soybeans, which I used to raise and still have on my farm, and mostly in the United States and Brazil. And they're used in East Asia to make soy sauce, bean sprouts, which I use when I make a pad thai, tofu or bean curd, and then soy flour is a protein additive to many foods, as well as to livestock feed. And soybeans are also high in an oil content, used for cooking oil. Of course, on the shelf, we go down to the store and we find Van Camp's, Bush's, and other famous ones. And it's hard to believe that in 1980, I was making arrangements for a feast activity in Eugene, Oregon. And there was an old fellow up in the Coburg Hills named Chris Cogletti. He was old because, he was 80 years old at the time, and I thought that was just really, really something. And the closer I get to it, it's not as old anymore. But I was much younger in 1980, and I was arranging for a steak fry and a hayride for singles and young adults, and we had old Chris Cogletti, and he liked to ride horses and make this big steak fry, and he was explaining this menu, and along with the steaks that he was going to cook for this was beans, and of course, I'm saying, what do you put in the beans? So we went over the list of the do's and the don'ts of what you put into beans. And they were very savory. It was country style. And then we were probably familiar with the several expressions, putting beans on the table, which means just like bringing home the bacon, right? It's earning enough money to put food on the table, enough to get by. And then, of course, we've heard the expression, putting meat in the beans. That's a little extra. That's kind of like a bonus, something over and above and beyond. You have a little more money than just the basics, so you can add to it. Rhetorically means you're just a little bit better off than putting beans on the table. And then we are familiar with the expression, not worth beans. Well, in other words, it's not just not worth very much. After all, beans are relatively cheap. What are a few beans worth? Although we can remember back on Jack and the Beanstalk that his mother didn't think those 5 beans were worth very much. And then we probably have heard the expression, doesn't know beans. Well, doesn't know very much, I think, is a reasonable translation. And then those of you that have played softball or baseball know what it is to get beaned, to be hit by when the batter gets hit by the ball that's thrown by the pitcher. And then when I grew up in an area that had a large Seventh-day Adventist population, they also had a high school in the area, a residential academy, and they still do. And I grew up, that was just the way it was. They were there. And I did not realize it until later, as I'm growing up, that many of the SDAers didn't eat meat. They were vegetarians. And I heard people mention that they called them bean eaters. It was a pejorative term. It wasn't meant as a compliment. I didn't know that it wasn't a compliment. I like beans. I didn't see what the problem was. So I never really quite understood that. It took me a while before somebody explained things to me. So when we get to the point here where Jacob was cooking the beans, Esau was very hungry and very desirous of food. Let's take a look on Genesis 25 and verse 31. We can continue on. And Jacob said, "Sell me this day your birthright." And verse 32, and Esau said, "Behold, I am at the point to die. What profit shall this birthright do to me?" Verse 33, and Jacob said, "Swear to me this day." And he, meaning Esau, swore to him, Jacob. And Esau sold his birthright to Jacob. In verse 34, then, meaning after that, Jacob gave Esau bread and pottage of lentils, and he did eat and drink and rose up and went his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright. If we look through the spiritual underlying lesson here, as well as the face value of it, beans represented the cares, or in this case the lentils, or the pottage, represents the cares of this world, the pulls of a carnal life. For Esau, the pleasant aroma caused his stomach to growl in anticipation. He was probably salivating heavily, remembering that the last time that he had such a savory dish. And Esau was very hungry. I've heard it said that the taste of food is in direct proportion to when you last ate. And it appears that he hadn't eaten for a while, and if he thought they were good before, they were especially good that day. The question facing Esau is the same question that faces us today. Will we trade the beans of this world for the inheritance from God? Esau was hungry, and he did. We take a look at Hebrews 11 and verse 25. Hebrews 11, verse 25. There's a principle here that we must add that to help us answer that question, will we trade the beans of this world for the inheritance from God? In Hebrews 11, 25, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. In other words, making choices. Making the right choices and not just being overcome by the pleasures of this world. You see, Esau cared more for the temporal, for this world, than his inheritance. His spiritual inheritance, not to mention his physical inheritance. And he demonstrated it by taking his inheritance too lightly. We can read about, in the book of Obadiah, about Esau. It's a prophecy concerning Edom, the tribe of Esau. Esau's twin brother Jacob knew that Esau didn't highly value his birthright. Jacob sought out the opportunity then to supplant Esau, to bargain with Esau, because Jacob knew Esau's casual attitude concerning his birthright. In Obadiah 1, in verse 6. In Obadiah 1, in verse 6. How are the things of Esau searched out? How are his hidden things sought up? Well, Jacob knew the hidden things of Esau. It was his twin brother. He knew Esau's cavalier attitude towards the birthright. Jacob, the very name Jacob means supplanter or heel grabber, recognized the value of the birthright and sought to obtain it from Esau. In the Teacher's Bible Commentary, the author notes that Jacob was making a value-for-value bargain, an exchange. Jacob was not offering more than what he thought Esau would be willing to pay. Jacob's offer was in line with his perception of how Esau valued the birthright. In Genesis 27, verses 1 through 38, it's that chapter that reveals how Jacob continued then to supplant Esau, not just in the birthright, but on through the blessing from their father Isaac. I'm not going to go through the blessing portion of it. But when... And so, how highly do we value the birthright that God has given to us? And that's really the question that we must answer. Is it important for us? Or will we be overcome by the good smells and the good tastes of this world? The things that are enticing to us, that will draw us away. The things, and we have good reason. We're very famished, we're very hungry, very, very thirsty. But are we thirsting for the truths of God? After we read Genesis, the whole chapter of 27, we find out that when Esau realized, after all of this, that he had gotten no longer had the birthright or the blessing, Esau cried out and he wept. But his reaction was too little. It was too late. And it lacked sincerity because he didn't care when the caring counted. His heart and attitude were not in tune with what his father Isaac expected and his grandfather Abraham expected him to be, but most important, what God the Father expected of him. So, how do we answer the question? Will we trade the beans of this world for the inheritance from God? Should we be hungry for the right things, which is hungry for the spiritual salvation that God is offering us, and avoiding the beans of this world?